Cash rules everything around me. Cream, get the money. Jigga, 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 y'all. Cash rules everything around me. Cream, get the money. Jigga, 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 y'all. Is Jay-Z really selling out? Or isn't he? Let's get the damn show started.
Listen, when Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike grab mics, it's real sports, real talk, on the field or on the court. If it happened in New York, it's covered like a blanket, dog. Interviews are ill, simply up close and personal. Batter up, Lloyd's batting first, set the tone. Mike's either at the stadium or the garden on the phone. Here we go, Giants or Jets, Yankees or Mets, Knicks or Nets. This is only an intro, the show is next.
A-O-B! And please, pardon my French, as we bring you all new episode of Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Talk Show. Listeners, today is Monday, August 19th, 2019, and this show airs every Monday from 1 p.m. to 2 p.m. on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Pocket Cast, Google Play, CastBox, Spotify. Be sure to hit that subscribe button so you won't miss a damn thing. And you can also catch previous tapings of the show. We're also on social media, Lloyd A. Thompson, one word, Instagram, Lloyd A. Thompson, one word, Twitter, LLOYD. Be sure to hit that follow button. And as always, if you got any questions that you want to send me and the Mad Mike to possibly answer on future shows, you can always send them through email to lloyd@partmyfresh.com, or you can send them directly to the website. A great show for you today, listeners, as Mad Mike comes back from his vacation. We're going to talk this whole Jay-Z nonsense. Is Jay-Z a sellout? Is he not a sellout? How does this affect Colin Kaepernick? What does Colin Kaepernick feel about this? We're going to talk about that. We're also going to talk about this whole Rich Paul thing, as the NCAA has amended one of the rules, or one of the requirements, so to speak, that they require agents to have in order to become an agent. We're also going to talk some NFL preseason football, as the Jets and Giants completed week two of the NFL preseason and move forward towards getting ready for the regular season. So as always, listeners, let's buckle up, sit back and relax, and start spreading the news. Hey, yo! Let's get it!
Ladies and gentlemen, it's Monday. That means it's time to talk sports with Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike. Let's go.
As always, we gotta find out where the Mad Mike is and where he's calling from. But I'm gonna switch things up, as I wanna say, welcome back, Mad Mike, baby!
Yo, it's Lloyd. Pleasure to be back, man. Took a little vacation. Took the family to Disney. We were in Tampa having some fun with some friends, and just had to get away from the, you know, day-to-day hustle of all of it. So appreciate you guys, listeners, everybody, allowing me to take some time away to be with my family, and now we back.
Listen, man, Mike, on one of the shows, I was saying, I hope you got a tan for me, brother. Did you actually get a tan while you was down there, or you didn't hit one? You didn't get one of those?
Oh no, I did, man. Actually, it's funny. I took some pictures with my daughters, and you know, like Mickey and the characters. And I was just laughing with everybody because I got a picture at like 10 o'clock in the morning with Mickey, and I was just straight dry. I looked fresh. And then I had a picture with Mr. Incredible by 2:10, and my shirt was soaked. And I was two different colors of brown. It was crazy, dude.
Listen, man, but I'm glad you guys had a good time. But there's a few things that I wanted to talk about, man, Mike. But one thing before we move on to this whole Jay-Z thing, as I want to talk about the NCAA and the Rich Paul rule, as the NCAA has amended its certification on the process for agents representing basketball players who are deciding whether or not to stay in school or not, or to explore the NBA draft, and will no longer require them to have a bachelor's degree, man. Mike, that was one of the things that the NCAA was requiring for agents to have. Instead, agents who don't have a bachelor's degree will have to be in good standing with the National Basketball Players Association, Mad Mike. I also wanted to get your thoughts on that before we move on to this Jay-Z thing, because I know you had some things you wanted to share about your opinion with this whole Rich Paul thing.
Yeah, Lloyd, and I don't know how many of our listeners are going to agree with me, and quite frankly, I don't care how many of them agree with me. Sorry, listeners, but you know what? To me, the NCAA made a mistake by amending this. There's nothing wrong with saying somebody has to have an associate's degree with saying somebody has to have a bachelor's degree or a master's degree if they're going to be an agent. And I'm going to give you, think about this. In New York City, a cop has to have a 4-year college degree. It's not the only place where when you go look on Indeed, some of these companies are saying as a requirement, 4 years bachelor, 4 years, you know what I mean? 6 years master, something, whatever it is, undergrad. It there's no reason that the NCAA can't ask for this. And two, you want to sell me on the fact that, well, why does your players need one? They're just playing a game. Fine. But what about everything else that comes in life after that game? What about everything that comes in life during that game? An agent is managing is helping you manage your money. He's helping manage your career. He should have more than being LeBron James' friend as a credential. How dare they ask somebody who's going to be leading these kids from high school to college, from college to the pros, to have a degree? How dare they, right? Like, give me a break, man. Are you kidding me? I know that if somebody came and was in my children's ear, then I want to know that they did everything possible to solidify themselves and qualify themselves. I mean, come on, man. I think that the NCAA had it right the first time, and I know that I'm probably in a minority, and I think that they shouldn't have backed down, because what they backed down to was the pressure of maybe some of these other schools that are going to back them are going to lose kids. Then, you know, maybe someone doesn't want to go to Duke because Duke is aligned with this belief, or somebody doesn't want to go to North Carolina because they align with that belief. I think they should have just kept it. Listen, every kid that goes to school needs to at least go to school for 2 years and get themselves an associate's degree. I don't care what sport you play. Every agent needs to have himself a bachelor's degree. What are we teaching these kids? We keep telling everybody, you know, school is so important. School is super important. And then every chance we get, we do other things to tell them, well, your degree really doesn't matter. Really doesn't hold any weight.
And you want to know what the funny thing is, man, Mike? I said on the show when I covered this that the NCAA should make these young men go to school for 3 years like they do in college football. You know, because if you come out and you forego your senior season, at least you're 1 year closer to having that degree, that almighty degree, which is very important.
Or you know, to graduate early. Motivates you to graduate 1 year early. See, I'm saying there's a million ways to look at it, Lloyd. But I've never supported the one and done. I've never supported the jump from high school. Either you go from high school to pros, and the reason I don't want to be a hypocrite is because we allow baseball players to enter the draft out of high school, right? But either they go straight after high school, where most of them aren't ready, or you have to go to school for 2 years. It's one or the other. And how many of them are going to forgo a scholarship unsure of where they're going to get drafted? That's why I say give people what they want.
You know,
change the rule.
Like you said, man, Mike, the NCAA's new requirement were heavily criticized because some current NBA agents didn't attend college, and a bachelor's degree requirement led to it to refer as the Rich Paul rule. And Rich Paul, like I was saying, who represents LeBron James, Anthony Davis, Ben Simmons, Draymond Green, among others, he recently bought his Clutch Sports Group under the United Talent Agency umbrella and began working with James, you know, a couple years after high school, and he didn't graduate from college. So James and Thunder guard Chris Paul criticized the NCAA new requirements on social media. So this had a lot to do with the NCAA.
That was another problem.
Huh?
That was another problem, not necessarily the NCAA created. That was a problem that NBA created. They knew where the money came from. The money for Clutch Sports came from LeBron James. That's facts. Look it up. Whether it was a loan or whatever it was, the fact of the matter was the money for Clutch Sports, for Rich Paul to start his agency, came from an NBA ball player, and not a former, a current NBA ball player. That's where the NBA messed up. You're already right then and there. We have all these rules in our country, right? Fox compliance and all these other things. And you're going to tell me that that's not a conflict of interest? This all started then. I get it. Listen, not everybody can afford college. Not everybody can go to college. Not everyone that's successful in life went. And not everybody that's going to be successful in life went to college. But at the end of the day, I don't see why this is. I don't see what was so outrageous about this. Not everybody has LeBron James as a best friend. You know what I mean? Yeah. Some people actually have to go and work to gain that notoriety and start their own business.
Now, listen, before we move on to this whole Jay-Z thing, which I got a bone to pick with Jigga, all right? I just want to get your thoughts on what Rich Paul wrote. Now, this is quoting Rich Paul, listeners. Rich Paul wrote, requiring a four-year degree accomplishes only one thing, systematically excluding those who come from a world where college is unrealistic. Does anyone really believe a four-year degree is what separates an ethical person from a con artist? What's your thoughts on that comment made by Rich Paul, man, Mike?
Run it by me one more time. I'm sorry. I'm just trying to soak it all in.
Rich Paul wrote, requiring a four-year degree accomplishes only one thing, systematically excluding those who come from a world where college is unrealistic. Does anyone really believe a four-year degree is what separates an ethical person from a con artist?
Yeah, you see, that's there's so many layers there. There's so many layers there. No, I don't think a four-year degree separates an ethical man from a con artist. No, I don't. But at the same time, I don't think that everybody, he's talking about all the people in America that can't go to college, that can't afford college, that, you know, are going to struggle through college financially, blah, blah, blah. Once again, I just said it, everybody. How many people in this world are friends with LeBron James that can afford to skip college and know that they don't have to deal with those things? Look, man, I'm not saying that. Look, Rich Paul, we could sit here and have a conversation about is he an ethical man or is he a con man? Has he convinced players like Anthony Davis not to honor their contract and demand a trade mid-year just so he could pair them up in either what he's selling as a big market rather than a con man, right? I just want the best for my player. No, what you want AD to do is go play in L.A. You're a con man. You might not be conning AD, but you're conning us. So are you an ethical man? We're not talking about the NFL where players fight for their money every penny up front because their contracts aren't guaranteed. In the NBA, your contract is guaranteed, right? So when you sign it, you know you're guaranteed $100 million no matter what happens to you. So honor your contract. So do you see what I'm saying? You got to be able to look back at the whole thing. What he's trying to do is convince you to look at it his way. But he's a con man in his own right. Whether he has a degree, whether he's an ethical man, he's still a con man. And I just gave you one example of it. I didn't give you anything else.
That's a great point, Matt, Mike. A great point. And now just moving on to something else that has really irked me, Matt, Mike. And I'm going to do what you normally say. Well, I don't really care. And I don't care what listeners feel about this. I don't care what anybody feels about this because this is my opinion. All right. And one of the things about America is the freedom of speech. All right. So I'm going to use my freedom of speech to give my opinion on this whole Jay-Z thing, man, Mike. Now, I'm going to need a few minutes. All right. To run my mouth. And while I'm running my mouth, man, Mike, I want you to soak in what I'm saying. And then also want to give you, I want to get your opinion on how you feel about this situation as well. All right, man, Mike, because I really don't consider Jay-Z a prophet or visionary. All right. But if I was being truthful, I must admit that it's impossible not to admire the way he climbed out of Brooklyn, all right? The Marcy housing projects, all right? And me, being from the same boat growing up in the Mean Project in the South Bronx, all right? Our blessings are on a different level, all right? But I'm in a much better situation, thanks to God, you know, than I could have been. And a bunch of my friends, family, and loved ones still in the same situation that I grew up in, okay? And with your own words, all right, you constructed, Jay-Z I'm talking about, a machine that catapulted Jay-Z to the position of the richest musician on earth, Matt, Mike, all right? And listeners, I appreciate his quiet activism that includes setting up a trust fund for the children of police shooting victims, Sean Bell, bailing out protesters in Ferguson, Missouri, all right, after the death of Mike Brown, using your platform to tell stories of Khalif Browder and Trayvon Martin. Even with all of that, I didn't put Jay-Z on a pedestal or hold him to an impossible standard except the one that makes him being able to rap his ass off. And I don't normally curse, but this is how much this means to me, or this is how truthful or passionate I am in what I'm saying right now, all right? When I discovered that Jay-Z and his Roc Nation company were partnering with the National Football League to consult on Super Bowl halftime shows and collaborating with the league's social justice campaign, I still don't quite know why I was so disappointed to discover that that was the one thing I feared the most, man, Mike. Someone as powerful as Jay-Z doing this. All right? Now, let's be real. Let's be real, Jay-Z. Let's be real, listeners. The NFL has no interest in social justice. As long as they can keep their new millennium assets, okay, mute until players repeatedly are concussed from brain damage and have less cartilage in their knees to render them disposable, the NFL couldn't care less about black lives. I'll say it again. They could care less about black lives. The only reason the cabal of billionaire owners are attempting to look like they give a fuck, excuse me again, is because of one man, Colin Kaepernick. And there was no need for the NFL to frankly put or ban Colin Kaepernick from the NFL. The NFL and its owners stripped Colin Kaepernick of his livelihood and made space for mediocre men, Mad Mike, who would happily total on. And I don't care to debate if Colin Kaepernick is an elite-level quarterback, all right? But it is undeniable that there are dozens of lesser signal callers, quarterbacks, for those who don't know what signal callers are, drawing checks from the NFL who were rewarded for their willingly silent compliance. But try as they might, all right? Try as they might, they could not make Colin Kaepernick disappear. Colin Kaepernick did not think that kneeling would stop disproportionate police killings or eliminate inequality. All Colin Kaepernick wanted to do was for people to see it, people to talk about it, people to understand that America at once, the land of the free, as we say, and the home of the enslaved, with all of the infinite power and might it might possess, they still cannot silence Colin Kaepernick's message, all right? And in my opinion, I can care less who doesn't like it. Any social justice partnership with the NFL that doesn't include Colin Kaepernick, listeners, and Mad Mike, not only lets the owners off the hook and validates their shadow ban, but it essentially profits from the movement that he started. And it hands the proceeds to the NFL. And I know, you know, Jay-Z said that the only way to move forward is by creating conversations. He didn't create a conversation, Mad Mike. Colin Kaepernick was the one that did that. And Jay-Z hijacked it for a check, in my opinion. And none of this negates the work Jay-Z has already done, nor is it a condemnation on Jay-Z. All right? I'm just shocked that someone who was once riding for Kaepernick is okay with partnering up with the NFL, Mad Mike. This upsets me a great deal. I just want to get your thoughts on that as well before I move on, because Colin Kaepernick has finally came out and said something, you know, pertaining to this. But I just want to get your thoughts before I move on to what Kaepernick said pertaining to this whole situation.
I'll be honest with you. I don't know how I feel right now about it. I can hear the arguments. And I can understand the arguments on both sides of the street, but I will say this. I'm starting to get to the point where I feel like, what's the difference between these moves that he's making and let's take for an example, Kanye West wearing a MAGA hat. What's the difference? And here's where I'm going with that. If you want to believe that one of the main goals of the masses, of the billionaire boys club, of people like you know, whatever you want to call them, look to weaponize affluent African Americans and use their money and their power to kind of, you know, Lil Wayne saying, I don't believe racism is real. Kanye in a MAGA hat. Jay-Z saying, we're past kneeling. You don't look at the fact that how your words are detrimental, or Stephen A. Smith saying Colin Kaepernick doesn't mean anything to the cause like Muhammad Ali. He doesn't belong in the same context as what Muhammad Ali went through. No, he does. And every time another one of these individuals make comments like this, you're doing is setting us back in our fight. Not everybody is worth $1 billion or approaching $1 billion like Jay-Z. And those are the people that he's forgetting about. What can Jay-Z do? Get ownership and sign Colin Kaepernick? At the end of the day, that one comment, whether he does it or not, that one comment kind of just sets everything back. And that's why I'm happy Colin Kaepernick came out with the post and you know, shouted out Albert Wilson and Eric Reid for continuing to kneel, because Malcolm Jenkins did the same thing to him. It's constantly happening, man. And that's the issue I have. Look, there's people that believe that Jay-Z was used in his $1 million less than 1% ownership stake in the Nets. He was used just as a central figure to gentrify Brooklyn. And he willingly accepted because he wanted to make, because he got handsomely paid, right? So to me, it's just like, how many more times is it a black and blue issue? Is it a Black Lives Matter issue? Is it a green issue, as in money? What's going on here? And that's why I don't know necessarily how to feel yet. Because for me, I guess it's too early in the process to see if he is going to use his supposed partnership or potential ownership to evoke change. But his initial comment to me says, nah, you're just being used as a mouthpiece.
And like you said, Jay-Z seems to think that folks are ready to move forward from that Colin Kaepernick's kneeling protest. But like you said, Colin Kaepernick says otherwise.
What folks? That's the thing. Boy, let's be honest. Who's ready to move forward? Who? Him? The billionaire boys club that is partnering up with him? All these other rich, and I hate to say it this way because it's not necessarily true. All the rich, you know, all just rich ownership, just people that all they care about is making money. They understand that this, you know, hurts their pockets. This hampers what they can do, and he's kind of co-signing with them right now.
And that's a tough part, and that's why I'm so upset by the whole situation as of now, man, Mike. Like you said, things can change. Well, who knows what Jay-Z's ultimate goal is?
Listen,
like, but for now, for what I'm seeing in the comments that he made, it's, you know what I'm saying? It's BS, man. It's BS.
If baseball owners can continuously vote to accept lesser offers to not allow Mark Cuban into their game as an owner, and if the NBA owners can unanimously vote out Donald Sterling, what change can Jay-Z actually bring that's not going to set off the other owners and want to push him out? That's the thing about it. They can force you to sell. We're not talking about, does Jay-Z have the long money that the rest of them do, that the NFL has to fight them in court to prevent him from selling? If he does anything they deem detrimental to the game, remember they were threatening to kick Jerry Jones out of the league last year for siding with Ezekiel Elliott. Do you think Jay-Z can do anything to bring about change in this league as far as the kneeling and the politics and police brutality? He can't do anything. What he's going to do is tell us what we want to hear now. And as soon as he gets in, he's just going to count his money. There's nothing he can do.
You're absolutely right. And I agree with you. This is, you know, they say the rich get richer and the poor get poorer.
Nah, but you want to know what? Here's the thing about him, and he's got to pay attention to it. The poor ain't siding with him no more. That's the thing he has to pay attention to. They saw what happened in Brooklyn. They saw what happened. Listen, he was stomping his feet for the Nets, right? Brooklyn. Look at how the property value over there blew up. Look at how their taxes blew up. Look at how their neighborhood changed. And what'd he do? He bounced. He created Roc Nation Sports and sold his whatever assets he had, whatever percentage he had, sold it and broke out. And where did all those other people that believed in him, what did they get stuck with? Selling their homes. Yeah, they made some money off of it. Being forced out. Others that stayed, looking at new neighbors, looking at a neighborhood that they hate to be a part of now. Because it's not their neighborhood that they know and love. Let's keep it real. And what did he do? He took his money after he made his money and he saw the next opportunity, he moved on.
And you know, Jay-Z said he's a capitalist, man, Mike. He's correct. A capitalist.
And he capitalized, and you can't hate on the man for capitalizing on him. But all I'm saying is all those people that you are selling, that you think you appeal to, you don't appeal to them anymore, man. You don't. And he's got to come to grips with that at some point, too.
Yeah, and the former 49ers quarterback, he posted a photo Sunday, Mad Mike, that appeared to be taking a swipe at something Jay-Z said last week, or what Jay-Z said last week, you know, during his press conference with the NFL and Commissioner Roger Goodell. And Colin Kaepernick was quoted as saying, "We move past kneeling to actionable items." And that doesn't seem, you know, Colin Kaepernick doesn't see it that way.
Yeah, well, Colin Kaepernick doesn't have a job.
Yeah. And
so what actionable item have we moved towards?
Right. Exactly. And in his picks, he posted a pic of Eric Reed kneeling, Kenny Stills, Albert Wilson, like you said. And all of these players have continued to kneel in a year since Colin Kaepernick first started his racial injustice protest.
Yeah, I believe Eric Reed also criticized Jay-Z.
Yeah, he criticized him. You're absolutely right.
So it's you know, man, I'm gonna be honest with you. I don't want to jump on him just yet simply because I don't know what he has in store for us when he makes comments like that. But I just from my experiences in life, just from the things I've seen, it's those comments that hurt the movement of the people. It's those type of comments. It's individuals like him that, you know, don't let them use you as a weapon. And it shocks me because he's one of the people that brought that thought process to the forefront with his criticisms of Kanye West.
And you like, don't let them, like you said, Jay-Z is reportedly to get major majority ownership in the NFL team.
And that's what they're saying. I don't know if it's going to be a majority, like TMZ is saying, but it's going to be significant. And the reason I say I don't know if, significant can be as much as 50%. I don't know if anybody's ready to give him full ownership, 51%. But the one thing I'll tell you, if he does get 50%, ownership of an NFL team, and why I say he's pushing upwards of a billion, and I'm sure that he can go and get himself another $1 billion in credit and put up $2 billion for, you know, for a team or whatever you want to call it. He'll make that money back quick. It's a dangerous game for them. I don't know, you know, so I don't know how much, because listen, Lloyd, if you give him 50%, he doesn't have final say. You can force him to be an owner with somebody else. But at the same time, it ain't going to take him but so long before he could put together an additional 1% on his own and become majority owner. You know what I mean? We don't know if they want that. As a matter of fact, I'd go out and on a limb and say 90% don't want that.
And Eric Reed, current safety for the Carolina Panthers, he called this act despicable. All right, and quoting Eric Reed, Eric Reed quoted saying, "Jay-Z claimed to be a supporter of Colin. He wore his jersey. He told people not to perform at the Super Bowl because of the treatment the NFL did to Colin. And now he's going to be a part owner," Eric Reed said, smiling and shaking his head. "He's sounding despicable."
Yep. Why? Well, it's crazy. But you know what? I'm sure Jay-Z didn't know that an opportunity like this would present itself when he was sticking with Colin Kaepernick. And that's why I said, I don't know if it's a black or white issue more than it's a green issue. It's just a matter of a man who already has more than anybody can you know, it's just his strive for more. And you know, to an extent, I get it. Like, it doesn't stop. You can leave all the money in the world behind to your kids, your grandkids. But and that's how these all these owners, you know, how many of these owners had something left to them? Something, you know, profitable, something, you know, that things that we have never had left to us. You know what I mean? Where some of them just walk into it. Stephen Jones, for example, his father, Jerry Jones, buys the Cowboys. Stephen Jones is now going to grow into the Cowboys, you know, owns the Cowboys. They're his, and they're going to be his kids. It's going to be his kids, and then his kids' kids. And I can see what Jay-Z is doing. But at the same time, from Jay-Z, from my point of view, like, you claim to be about the people, you got to be smarter than this. There's got to be other ways. There's got to be other words. There's got to be other phrases you can use to defend your move.
Yeah, Eric Reed also said that Jay-Z once said that he was a black Republican. So Eric Reed said he should fit right in with his new homies then.
Well, yeah, he has a song, Black Republican, but he, you know, and Nas was on it, and you wouldn't confuse Nas and Jay-Z in their interests. It's you know what I mean? So I get it, but
Colin Kaepernick's current girlfriend, Nessa, who's on Hot 97, she was super, super duper upset. You know, I was driving, riding in the car, and I heard her, you know, her give a point of view. And, you know, she's saying, obviously, through the radio waves, don't be fooled by what Jay-Z is doing. Don't be fooled by it.
But that's what I'm telling you, man. The people are not necessarily, the people were fooled before. You know what I mean? Oh, man, we got, people forget when Diddy tried to buy the Knicks. People don't remember that. How they didn't want Diddy in because of what Diddy made. And then when Jay-Z finally, you know, years later, finally got in the door, it meant something. It was like, it was, yeah, you know what? It was kind of like Obama making it to the White House. You know what I mean? To an extent, you know, of course, in a lesser.
As an African-American, it was something to be proud of.
Yes, it was like, look, man, anything is possible. You know what? We can make it to the White House. We can own an NBA team. We can do this. You know what I mean? That's what it stood for. But like I just explained it to you. I just gave you I didn't give you my opinion necessarily. I gave you facts. I told you exactly what happened in Brooklyn down there. You know what I mean? And he was nowhere in sight. He was gone. Left. Done.
It's crazy, man, Mike. But let's see how this pans out. But for now, listeners, that's my take on it. That's Mad Mike's take on it. I'm sure you have your own opinions, or hopefully you can form your own opinions. And it'd be interesting to see, you know, how you guys feel about it as well. You're more than welcome to shoot us your thoughts, you know, through email to Lloyd@partmyfresh.com or directly to the website to give us your thoughts on this issue. So, but Mad Mike, let's take a quick commercial break. When we come back, we're going to talk some NFL preseason football. As your New York Jets is looking pretty good, and so is Daniel Jones. So we'll be right back with more of the Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Talk. Welcome back to the Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Talk Show. First half of the show, we covered the remainder of the Rich Paul ruling with the NCAA making amends on a rule. And we talked about this whole Jay-Z being a partner with the NFL. All right, but now let's talk. And also welcoming back Mad Mike from his vacation with his family. Can't forget that. Let's talk some preseason football, Mad Mike. And let's start off talking about your New York Jets. All right, and halfway through the preseason, most of the key Jets have gotten some real game reps, Mad Mike. With the exception of Le'Veon Bell, he's been bubble wrapped despite not playing for about 600 days. All right, but everyone else has seen the field and given us something to think about moving forward, Mad Mike. All right, I just want to talk about Sam Darnold. All right, and I think that Sam Darnold looks like he's taking steps forward. All right, Darnold has only led a handful of drives thus far in the preseason, but has put up a TD, all right, touchdown, listeners, on the board on both of his opening drives. He looks sharp. He's accurate and decisive in Adam Gase's offense thus far, man, Mike. And I'm very excited to see what he could do in his sophomore year after a rookie season that left me with some concerns. I'm not going to front. It left me with some concerns, and I've mentioned those concerns on previous shows. All right? But it appears that his development will be especially crucial, Matt Mike, considering the fact that Trevor Siemian has looked very uninspiring, and Davis Webb looks as though he should be out of the NFL come September, Matt Mike. What's your thoughts on Sam Darnold?
I think Sam Darnold has been absolutely—he looks like he's going to be the best quarterback in New York. It's his footwork. You know, I know a lot of people I saw on Twitter. I was away, so I had to watch the replay of the game. But during the game, I saw a lot of people on Twitter Thursday, Friday, talking about, you know, how much more athletic Daniel Jones looks than Sam Darnold. And I watched the game, Lloyd, and what blows my mind, and I actually heard them talking about it during the telecast on the NFL Network, was it's not that he's not athletic. It's that you're not going to see him break out and run. He's not going to be Josh Allen. And just his ability to move in a pocket and still see the field, to throw off base, to throw off the back foot, and we've heard Adam Gase talk about it. His ability to do all those things is why he doesn't have 500 yards rushing. But, you know, people forget this kid used to play linebacker. He didn't move to quarterback until freshman year of college. So talking about a kid that's really, he's really young, I mean senior year of high school, a kid that's really young, who's still very green at the position, and he's doing all these things. It blows my mind. And I personally, you saw the back shoulder throw to Robbie. Robbie looking good too on a slant route. He looks like he's really, really sharpened the route tree. And I like what I've seen from them offensively. Ty Montgomery, you remember I was saying that this is going to be the signing of the offseason for them. I know a lot of people were down on him, you know, Aaron Rodgers had him cut from Green Bay after the fumble against the Rams. But this kid can do it all. You know, and don't let Aaron Rodgers sour you on what Ty Montgomery can do. He played 4 years at Stanford under John Harbaugh. The kid can play
ball. Yeah, I like Ty Montgomery a lot. I like him a lot.
And he played receiver and running back for Harbaugh. And he started out as a receiver strictly and then moved to running back with Green Bay. And now with the Jets, I'm talking about how many teams can put out a split backfield of Le'Veon Bell at running back? It doesn't matter who the names are. And you know that both guys can actually go for 80 receptions each with their eyes closed. We're talking about Le'Veon Bell, who averages 80, 75 catches a year at the running back position, splits out wide sometimes, and can run receiver routes. And Ty Montgomery, who was a receiver, who's both. The Jets offense is going to be so versatile, and once they can find a way to get the NFL to split their partnership with the New England Patriots, because I'm throwing that in there because Josh Gordon gets reinstated, but my guy Chris Herndon gets a full month ban for drunk driving. It makes no sense to me how you can do it. But as soon as they get Chris Herndon back, man, sky's the limit for this offense. Let me tell you.
Now, let's talk about the starting defensive line, man, Mike, because they seem to they look dominant to me, all right? And the Jets have gone up against two of the weaker offenses, although I do think the Giants' offensive line is a lot better in the preseason, but the starting defensive line has ripped both of them apart in back-to-back weeks. All right, let's talk about Henry Anderson and Quinnen Williams. They have shredded their opposition, shredded them, which has also allowed linebackers and safeties to waltz right through to the quarterback, all right, resulting in sacks and pressures. And some of the backup players also, Matt Mike, has also shown a little something. Brandon Copeland, Bronson Cufasi, and Anthony Wynn of all the quarter sacks. And Polite looks a little bit lost out there, Matt Mike. I want to get your thoughts on that. But even if he isn't a factor this season, the Jets look pretty good at the D-line and linebacker positions, Matt Mike.
Yeah, as far as the D-line, the front seven, I'll just call them the front seven because nobody knows if Jets are going to go 3-4 or 4-3. So I'll just, as far as the front seven goes, the mix has worked. It has worked in the preseason. I know that they lost to the Giants, but their first units dominated the Giants' first units. Absolutely, it was absolute domination, man. I believe they went down, scored a touchdown on six plays, and then came out and forced a three and out, and they pushed the Giants backwards. Pretty impressive. And the way that the D-line blew up the Atlanta Falcons offensive line was damn impressive. You had Quinnen Williams showing you that burst and the ability to bull rush and bowl over offensive linemen. We'll see what happens. I know Avery Williamson. I know a lot of people are worried about him. Initially, I was worried about him tearing his ACL as the inside linebacker in the 3-4 with C.J. Mosley. But fact of the matter is, by all accounts, Joe Rivera, check him out, has read it. He was at Jets camp for the entire week last week. Avery Williamson was only a two-down linebacker. The same way the Tennessee Titans were using him in two-down sets, which caused him to want to leave. That's how the Jets were using him. He can't cover in third down. And if you ask me, the emergence or the signing of C.J. Mosley, a four-time Pro Bowler, you don't need Avery Williamson in the middle. So I'm looking for help me out. The rookie they took in the fifth round, Blake Cashman. I'm looking for him to have an amazing impact. We thought he was only going to be special teams, but he's been on the field. He actually caused the fumble in the Giants game against who was your running back? Paul Perkins. So he's we'll see if he can handle. They say he's undersized and his body will wear down, and it usually leads to injuries. We'll see if he can handle it, but he's looked pretty good in the field.
All right, now so it's going to be. I'm going to be curious to see what your thoughts on this, because I think the cornerback position is as bad as we feared. All right, I think these guys have been torn apart in the two games that I've seen. All right, the starters have held their own well enough, though. But certainly, they've been quite impressive. All right, but the Falcons' combination of Julio Jones, Mohamed Sanu, and Calvin Ridley is a tough task for anyone, but the Giants' preseason group shouldn't scare anybody. All right, and as soon as the starters left the field, the backups have been so atrocious, Mad Mike, that any team should be able to simply lob balls repeatedly until they reach the end zone. And an already weak group will likely turn into the worst cornerback group in the league if the Jets suffer any injuries this season. Now, again, I'm not talking about the starters, Mad Mike. All right, this is geared towards the reserves. More or less the comment that I just made. What's your thoughts on the Jets' cornerback position? I love the safeties. Love the safeties. I think the Jets have the best safety tandem in football.
Here's. So, I'm it's funny. You gave me a lot there. First of all, I think that their starters are an average group of starters. I think the ceiling for their starters is good, a good combination. Good secondary, not a great one. And that's at their best. I think they can be just good. But, overall, I think they're average. I think Tremaine Johnson should see a better season than last year. It can't get any worse. And some of his best years was under Greg Williams. So I'm expecting he'll be decent. I don't know that there's a difference between, pull and screen. I don't know that you upgraded there at the nickel. Maybe he's less penalty prone, and that'll be an upgrade there. And you know me, I'm not a fan of Darrell Roberts. Darrell Roberts is one of those guys that I think he plays so scared. He gives nothing but cushion because he doesn't want to get beat. And by all accounts, once again, look up Joe Rivera's reports from camp. Darrell Roberts getting beat. He's getting beat in practice by his own guys. That's not going to make me confident that he's not going to get beat during games. Now, their backups, easily worst secondary cornerback group in football, even at safety. Easily this secondary with one injury can turn real mediocre. Now, I know you love the safety play, but here's something that I thought about. And by the way, the bad secondary play, I think it's what you said leading to Ja'Kai Polite playing a little tentative at linebacker. I don't think he's fully pinning his ears back and trying to get to the quarterback. I think they're using him in coverage. And I think he doesn't know what to do. Remember, he moved from D-line to outside linebacker in college in a senior year. So outside linebacker is still pretty new to him. Now you're asking him to play coverage linebacker at times. The kid looks like he's absolutely lost. If it's me, I just let him pin his ear back and go after the quarterback. But secondary-wise, here's what I pitched to you. There's still a Pro Bowl safety. Still, I think, has a lot left in the tank, even though the last 2 years have been injury-prone. There's still a Pro Bowl safety on the market. With the inside linebacker injury, you know, to Avery Williamson, here's what I suggest. As soon as you can get Marcus May back on the field, maybe you sign Eric Berry and play him in the back and use, you know, you can use him to I guess, cover as a coverage linebacker in a lighter defense with the tight, you know, covering a tight end. And then you can move Jamal to the back end. Or in running downs, you move Jamal, who's a tackle machine, who's always in the backfield. You move Jamal to that inside linebacker spot next to C.J. Mosley, and you put Eric Berry back there playing next to Marcus May. Why do you have to follow the same traditional lineups everybody else does? How come you can't intertwine your safeties as an inside linebacker in coverage on the tight end, and then on running plays, move the bigger safety, the better tackler into the inside linebacker slot? You play football. Why wouldn't it work? Tell me.
Yeah, no. That would be a smart move, and I'm surprised Eric Berry is actually still on the market. I'm surprised he is, man, Mike. But let's talk about this Jets kicking game, which is comically terrible.
Let's talk about the lack of kicking game. Sure.
I mean, we already knew this, but it had to be said, man, Mike. And the biggest and most glaring takeaway from mostly the meaningless first two preseason games is that the Jets are desperate for a kicker. Arguably, the only thing that's identical to the regular season and the preseason is kicking. And yikes. Wow.
Look, they missed 4 extra points in the preseason. 4.
Yeah. Wow.
Well, but here's the thing. Honest to God, I don't think the kicker is on the roster just yet. I think the guy that they were targeting from the Eagles just got traded to the Minnesota Vikings for a fifth-round pick. You don't trade fifth-round picks for kickers if you're not going to start them in a regular season. So here's my prediction. My prediction is Dan Bailey will eventually get waived after the final preseason game. And one of the most accurate kickers in NFL history might not have a lot left, but the Ryan Khalil signing has shown us, the one-year signing of Ryan Khalil has shown us that Joe Douglas does understand that there is a window here, and he's not going to let it go to waste by having a bad kicker. I predict Dan Bailey will be a New York Jet week one.
All right, yeah, listen, all in all, man, Mike, I truly believe in my heart that the Jets will be competitive this year. And it's just if the second fewest wins in the NFL over the past 3 seasons, better than only Cleveland, but this could very well be the year that the Jets bounce back. All right, the first team offense has looked incredibly sharp, even without their prom acquisition, Le'Veon Bell, seeing a snap. All right, and there's not a lot of elite talent on the field, but there aren't as many gaping weaknesses either, man, Mike. Meaning that if Sam Darnold makes a big step in year 2, the Jets have enough tools to be competitive on offense. And on defense, this team is absolutely loaded with first-round picks and Pro Bowl-level talent, Matt Mike. There's elite talent level, Jamal Adams, linebacker, Mosley, the defensive line, Picky Williams, supporting players like Avery Williamson or not, Marcus May, and the Iron Man Anderson can also make an impact each week. The clear Achilles heel is the comeback group, which could threaten to turn an otherwise top 10 defense, man, Mike, into a mediocre or worse group, okay? And if the Jets can find ways to mark this weakness, the Jets may field an above-average offense and defense for the first time in such a long time that I'm not willing to check the statistics on this one, all right? This team, it may not be an elite team, man, Mike, but this is easily the best team the Jets have put on the field in I say this team could be 10-plus wins. And I thought the last team that was really good was a team in 2015, which put up 10, which was a 10-win season team, Matt Mike.
Yeah, I'm going to disagree with you from the sense that, yeah, this is the most talented team since that 10-win team. But I think that this is the, with real talent, real elite talent. This is the first team they've had with real elite talent since that 2009-2010 first 2 years of Rex Ryan, where you could look at it and you knew the quarterback was holding back that roster. On this team, there's like that that Ryan Fitzpatrick year, that was just they had really good elite. I'm not going to call Brandon Marshall at that point his career elite, but they just had really good receivers, really strong receivers, and this guy played out of his mind, you know. But when you look at it, Antonio Cromartie was already on the downswing. That team was more names than talent. The names were bigger than the talent level. But now I think that this team is legit loaded. They don't have guys on their second and they don't got guys on their third and fourth contracts. They got guys still on rookie deals and on their second contracts, guys in their super prime Pro Bowlers. I just hope to death. As a matter of fact, Joe Rivera, Sporting News, shot me a message and said to me, "Hey, would you trade Leonard Williams for Jalen Ramsey right now? Consider that."
Listen, I would do it. Would you do it? Would you do it?
And my response to him was, if I had to pay $100 million to one of those players, because they both are on the verge of $100 million contracts, I'd go Jalen Ramsey.
Yeah.
He's more proven. It's probably a safer position to play since he's not in the trenches. He probably aged better. And realistically, what has Leo shown you? Leo has shown us, but Jalen has shown us more.
The one position that the Jets are strong in, the D-line.
Yes. Yes. But what worries me, Lloyd, is, like I said, the Avery Williamson injury is going to force them to play more 4-3 fronts than 3-4 fronts. And the only question I have is, you know, Pepper Johnson last year said Leo's not a 3-4 guy. He's a 4-3 guy. And this is their chance to say, hey, you know, if you trade him, can you go to the 4-3? I mean, if me and you were talking and we're talking and saying, hey, we got Henry, Quinnen, Leo, Shepard, and Kafusi. On a line, we can play a 4-3. I don't know if you can play a 4-3 if you remove him from that equation. So, just have questions. They have things to consider.
We'll see. Like I said, it's two preseason games in, so I'm pretty sure, you know, as we move forward to opening day or the first game of the NFL season, you know, we have a lot more NFL preseason to talk about when it comes to the New York Jets. But now let's move on to the New York Football Giants, Mad Mike. And the New York Giants defeated the Chicago Bears 32-13. On Friday night at MetLife Stadium, and they improved to 2-0 in the preseason, which means much or nothing, all right? And they go on a road trip to Cincinnati. Cincinnati is next up on the schedule, all right? I want to say that Eli Manning's first drive of the 2019 preseason lasted less than 2 minutes and consisted of one pass, two runs, including a penalty, and then a punt. His second one came Friday against the Chicago Bears, and he had a 20-yard strike and ended on a touchdown with no incompletions in between. And I thought that it was an efficient Manning, all right? I thought that they mixed it up. They had some play action. They had some drop back. They had some bootlegs. A lot of guys were catching the ball, and the line kept them upright, Matt Mike, this revamped line. Much better than last year. This is the best offensive line the Giants have had probably since the Super Bowl team. All right, it's only preseason, all right? But getting a W is never a bad thing. And seeing Eli Manning throw the ball the way that he did, you just got to give him time. If you have him time, he's a pretty sharp quarterback. That's not a bad thing. And Daniel Jones came in, all right? Daniel Jones looked good as well. All right, the rookie quarterback, first NFL drive last week, yielded a touchdown. No interceptions. His next three series, fumble, punt, fumble. That's how Friday night began for Jones. And he was ultimately responsible for both turnovers. But here's the thing, Matt Mike. This is what you want to see from rookie quarterbacks on how they react to situations like that. And I didn't think that he panicked. And I thought that he rebounded. And he rebounded with two scoring drives, a field goal and a touchdown before halftime. And everybody is saying that at some point, Daniel Jones is going to, you know, knock Eli Manning off the box this, you know, during the season at some point. Some people seem to think that he may be the opening You know, he might be the starting day quarterback, which I doubt. But I will say, someone that was, I'm still not happy the Giants picking him at 6, because I still think that he would have been there at 17. Okay? But thus far, I know it's only 2 preseason games. Thus far, he's better than advertised, man, Mike. What's your thoughts on Jones and Eli Manning?
I don't have much thoughts on Eli Manning at this point in time. I think we know what Eli Manning is. I don't think he's a championship-level quarterback. I don't care what they tell us. If they thought he was a championship-level quarterback, they wouldn't have taken Daniel Jones or any other quarterback at 6. It's not about, you know what I mean? If you know you still have a guy like New England, for example, Tom Brady's older than Eli Manning, and you don't see them trying to groom the next quarterback. As a matter of fact, they traded the next quarterback in Jimmy Garoppolo because they still see a championship-level quarterback. So as far as Eli Manning goes, I think what you saw against the Jets is what you're going to see. I think you're just going to see a guy who's going to check it down. He's going to struggle to move the ball, same as last year, just going to struggle to get first downs, things like that. I know that they want to tell you that they got their wide receiver core is tougher. They have guys that are willing to make the catch over the middle now. And, you know, shots at Odell. But so it'll benefit him more. I don't see it. As far as Daniel Jones goes, I'm not going to tell you I'm not impressed by him. He's not. I'm going to actually curse on the show. Sorry, listeners. He's not the shit show I thought he was going to be. He has shown talent. But I will say this. We just said that the Jets backups are probably the worst secondary in all of football, so I don't know how much to read into that. One of his big plays in the Jet game was a 5-yard slant that Nickerson just like fell on the floor, and so, you know, I don't know how much of it we can read into there. Chicago also has very little depth in the secondary, but like you said, he faced adversity. And he bounced back from it, and that's what you want to see. The kid actually seems like he's coachable. He seems like he has no personality like Eli, which is probably what they like the most. They didn't draft the guy that's going to get himself into any trouble off the field. He handles the cameras well. He handles his interviews very well from that standpoint. Like I said, it's to me, listen, there was so much negativity that we all expected the worst. And he's shown out well. I saw, you know, as a matter of fact, because the Giants were home, we got the Giants telecast, right? We got the Carl Banks and Greg Bob Papa telecast.
Yeah.
And all you hear them talking about how much better he looked early on than what Sam Darnold looked like last year. And all I could think to myself, Lloyd, was, and not you know, they kind of, and that's what I hate about the home announcers, they kind of pitch you against the other team, like they make you hate it. But in my head, I'm saying Sam Darnold has been playing against ones since last preseason. Remember, Josh McCown didn't take one snap last year, not one, not even in the preseason. Sam Darnold has started his entire career playing against the ones from preseason to starting. So anything you've seen from him has been growing pains against NFL starters. We haven't seen Daniel Jones play one starting group yet.
Yeah, that's true. And I think Josh McCown just signed with somebody, didn't he?
The Eagles.
Right. Okay.
Yes. Yeah, so
he sounded let's move on to this receiving core, Matt Mike. And the Giants have not been playing household names at the glamour position of wide receiver in the preseason. All right. There have been 4 different players with receptions of 15 yards or longer in each of the first 2 preseason games. TJ Jones has looked really good. All right. Russell Shepard, Benny Fowler, Coley Latimer. They all stepped up in a position that was hit by injuries at the start of training camp. All right, and on top of that, Golden Tate, he'll be suspended for the first 4 games of the season. But nevertheless, everyone in the receiving room has embraced the opportunities, in my opinion. All right, and as a result, it's been positive for the most part, man, Mike. All 4 of the quarterbacks have thrown touchdowns, and the offense has scored at least 24 points in each game. Look, again, it's only the preseason. All right, but you got to take the positives out of what's going on. Got to take the positives. So the receiving core, again, lesser talent, you know, lesser talent secondaries. You know, it really didn't do much against the Jets starting secondary, but they also didn't throw the ball against the Jets secondary outside of a bootleg. All right? And then Chicago Bears, you know, obviously, like Mad Mike said, this secondary isn't the best secondary. But the bottom line is you want to see these guys running crisp routes. You want to see them catching the ball, not dropping any passes. You know, you want to see them making blocks. And it, they've been doing that thus far. They've been doing that thus far. So I'm quite impressed with the receiving core thus far, Mad Mike. What's your thoughts on the Giants receiving core? As this is a banged up group. And it's but it's opportunities for you know non-household names, so to speak.
I mean I think that TJ Jones has shown himself well. His stock is rising. He definitely is a sleeper for the job. You didn't really consider him, but Corey Coleman's knee injury has really opened the door for him. Benny Fowler is just catching touchdown after touchdown after touchdown. So. He's a possession receiver, and the only reason that you don't know if Benny Fowler is going to make the team is once Golden Tate serves his suspension and Sterling Shepard is back from it's a thumb injury, I believe.
Yeah, he broke his thumb.
Yeah, you know these guys are not Odell Beckham. These are also possession receivers, so you know it's harder for a guy like Benny Fowler to make the squad because you know he's a possession receiver, and all they're going to do is. There's just going to be no room to operate. You're not worried anybody can beat you deep, so you're just going to move the safeties. Everyone's going to play up. They're going to play a tight man, maybe a single high coverage man, and just let the safety roam if anybody does manage to break free. But they're just going to take away everything from underneath to slants to anything, you know, eight yards or less, and it's going to become hard for them. But I think that they've been really, really, really surprising. It doesn't, once again, you can only play who they put in front of you. So like you said, doesn't matter the players in front of you. You want to see that the guys are running the right routes. They're running crisp routes. They're in their spots when they're supposed to be. They're breaking off routes and reading the quarterbacks correctly. And so far they've done it. The offense is clicking right now in preseason. And you got to be happy with that.
Yeah. Listen, I want to give a shout out to the Giants offensive line. Nate Solder, Will Hernandez, Jalapio, Zeitler and Rimmers. You know, it may not be, you know, it's not the best offensive line in the NFL, but like I said, it's a better offensive line group, and they've been doing a really good job thus far. Really good job. And speaking of that offensive line, the Giants, Saquon Barkley hasn't ran the ball at all, and I don't think he will see any preseason games. I think the Giants are playing it smart, and I think the one player that can avoid playing in the preseason and be okay come game one is Saquon Barkley, all right? And the Giants managed only 40 yards on 18 carries in a preseason opener against the Jets while passing 37 times for 374 yards and three touchdowns, all right? And it wasn't the three-run pass into Sherman. You know, that's not what Sherman wanted to see, so to speak, all right? Friday was more like it. I thought Friday was a more balanced attack, man, Mike. Ross Smith, who started as Saquon Barkley, sat the second week in a row. Saquon Barkley, I'm talking about, not Ross Smith. He got things going, you know, on the first touchdown drive with five carries for 27 yards. And the former Cowboy ended up with 10 carries for 42 yards, you know, but it was undrafted rookie Jonathan Hillman who led all rushes with 56 yards and a touchdown on 16 attempts. And as the Giants ran the ball 35 times for 161 yards, Matt Mike. And that's an average of 4.6 yards per carry. All right, Paul Perkins, he had a fumble. But I can see Ross Smith supplant Paul Perkins. And I can see Hillman supplant Paul Perkins. And that's a shame because I think that Wayne Gallman, the running back, the backup running back, to Saquon Barkley last year, Mad Mike, he could be, I don't think he's the odd man out. I think Paul Perkins is the odd man out right now. But he can see his backup spot easily taken away from him by Ross Smith, Mad Mike.
Paul Perkins won't be on his team.
Yeah.
He's got fumbles in back-to-back weeks. You're talking about a guy that's been injury-prone throughout his career. Missed last year, a lot of last year with a torn pec. Coming back and showing ball security issues. Listen, we're not talking about guys that are fighting for the starting job as a running back. We're talking about guys that are fighting for the number two or number three role on the team. If you're melting down under that, listen, he's not going to be on his team. We know it. And it sucks for him because coming out of college, he had a lot of talent. He was able to catch the ball, but Paul Perkins can't hold on to the ball. The one guy that
he was on
I
the damn
was,
team, Matt Mike.
And there's no reason for him. Once again, like I said, because he couldn't not last year because he couldn't stay injured healthy the year prior. They take Saquon Barkley last year, and you know, you run into this issue. There's two guys I wanted to actually ask you about your thoughts on, and that was B.J. Goodson, who's probably no player stock has dropped more this offseason than B.J. Goodson, and that's big time for a team that needs a linebacking help. And the other guy I wanted to ask you about, and you might not even be concerned with him, with the cornerback depth that you seem to have developed this draft, is Sam Beal. You know, after taking him and using a third-round pick on him, you know, he's only practiced one time with the New York Giants in two off-seasons. He's only practiced once.
Yeah,
he hasn't been available.
Yeah, let's talk about Sam Beal, man, Mike, because I spoke about Sam Beal on last week's show, and you said the key word. He hasn't been on the field to show any potential or how he can benefit this football team. Okay, now I do think the Giants are going to keep him, man, Mike, and I really think the Giants are going to keep him because of one reason, and one reason alone, that they use a supplementary draft pick to get him to begin with. And how dumb will this team look or management look if they turn around and cut him? So I do think he will be on the team this year. I don't think he's going to be active because I think once the season starts, he's probably still going to be injured.
But that's what I'm saying. A guy falls, doesn't get drafted last year because of injury concerns, goes in a supplemental draft, comes out, gets hurt for you after his first padded practice, and hasn't even been able to put on the pads this year. Now, if you're asking me, one thing that I'm going to say about this, and you know it, if you're not going to play in games, you're not going to develop. But if you're not going to practice, you're not going to develop enough to get into the games to get, you know, experience and development there. This kid is going to be so far behind. I don't think he's ever going to make an impact on the Giants from at any point. I just don't.
If you're not on the practice field, you can't help. Like you said, because if you're not on the practice field, you're never going to be on the football field. Never. And this could be one that could go by the wayside. Now, as far as B.J. Goodson goes, the Giants have a linebacker by the name of Ryan Connolly from Wisconsin. Kid has played out of this world thus far in two preseason games to the point, Mad Mike, where Ogletree, okay, missed the game. He got the start now with the first-team defense, and he was shooting through gaps and all over the place being disruptive. B.J. Goodson can very well find himself being cut. And the only reason why I don't think he'll get cut, Matt Mike, is because we all know that the Giants' linebacking core is one of the weakest positions on this team. So I do think that despite him falling down the depth chart, that he still has enough value to this team, okay, where he'll stick on. Unless the Giants turn around and pick somebody up, a good linebacker that's cut during preseason. But if that doesn't happen, I do see him as sticking on as a special teamer. But facts is facts, Matt Mike. He's definitely...
Yeah, but Nate Stupar is a better special teams player than B.J. Goodson. In order to put B.J. Goodson there, you're going to probably have to cut a linebacker.
He's on a bubble.
Yeah, so, I mean, you're probably going to keep
Stupar over Goodson,
if it comes down to it.
Yeah, B.J. Goodson is a better linebacker than Stupar is. But, I mean, I guess that could be an arguable, you know what I'm saying? That could be
Well, that's my point, but here's the thing. If you're saying Ryan Connolly is going to jump Goodson, and Nate Stupar gives you, he might not be the best linebacker.
But he's a better special teamser.
Correct. Yeah. And then in that case, I mean, if you're going to keep Goodson just for mainly backup role in special teams, you're going to make your special teams worse. So the reason I'm paying attention to Goodson is because of obviously the Avery Williamson injury. He's an inside linebacker, and I think he's somebody the Jets would look into, considering that at one point he was a player on the rise. And maybe there's something they can coach there.
That's the only reason I'm looking at it. But he is one of those guys that's on the bubble, and it's going to be interesting to see if he sticks on or not. But right now, he could possibly be the odd man, you know, the odd man looking in. He could be. Now, let's talk, being that we're talking about B.J. Goodson and Sam Beal, let's talk about the Giants' defense. And I thought that the Giants' defense was more disruptive in game two, all right? And finding playmakers on defense, you know, was near of the top to do things list for the New York Giants. And all three of the team sacks on Friday came from newcomers, Marcus Golden and Olsen Pierre, all right? And Kareem Martin. All right, and look, prior experience playing for defensive coordinator James Betcher and Arizona both got to the quarterback. So did rookie O'Shane Zimenez. All right, and he's an intriguing third-round pick out of Old Dominion, man, Mike. But the key to the Giants' success is they got to be able to put pressure on the quarterback. Got to be able to. I don't think Dexter Lawrence and somebody that, you know, when you, if you play 3-4, I don't think you can split them out wide. You know, it's one of those ends in the 3-4. And thus far, he's been able to, you know, he's commanding double teams and freeing up, you know, lanes for linebackers to come in and make tackles. But he's just not, you know, one of those 3-4 guys got to be able to put pressure on the quarterback. And the Giants have three defensive tackles playing in the 3 technique. So I can see them mainly showing a 4-man front. I can see that happening, which in most 3-4s, that's what you show anyway, right?
I was just going to say, if you show a 4-man front, wouldn't that tell you that James Betcher was a... But doesn't it kind of make you feel like there's kind of a they failed feeling, you know what I mean, with this? This was the wrong hire, or they did acquire the wrong personnel a year ago for this guy's defense.
I will say that. It's funny that you say that, Matt Mike, because as I was watching the game, those are the exact words that I was saying to myself in my head. I was like, you know, I don't know if James Betcher is the right, you know, defensive coordinator for this team. The Giants don't have 3-4 personnel, Matt Mike. They got 4-3 personnel.
So you also talked about that, right?
You got a 4-3 personnel team with a 3-4 defensive coordinator, and he's coaching 4-3 personnel like they're 3-4. It's not going to work.
Yep.
It's not.
And that's one of the things. Remember, that's one of the things that's one of the things that Todd Bowles failed at. As his personnel started to shift and kind of change in the vision, he was unable to transform from that 3-4 to a 4-3 and his best players were better suited. Leo Williams, I just mentioned, in a 4-3. And that's why Leo Williams has never lived up to the hype. And that's what concerns me. Alec Ogletree was only available last year in a trade because they were shifting. The Rams shifted out of a 4-3 into a 3-4, and he didn't fit. And here's the Giants are shifting out of a 4-3 into a 3-4 and bring him on. It doesn't make sense. Not only that, but remember, the Jerry Reese years, the Tom Coughlin years, the Giants were a 4-3 defense. The Giants have never been
ever. They've in the existence of this team's or in the existence of the organization, they've always been 4-3.
Yep. Even yeah, you know what I mean? So even the Parcells years weren't fully 3-4. They were more 4-3. This right. team has won.
They would bring Lawrence Taylor and Carl Banks up, you know. Yeah,
correct.
Yeah, you're right.
So you know what I mean? And that's what I didn't understand. And it's funny that you were thinking that because that's exactly what I was thinking while I was watching the game. And I'm like, man, like,
if the Giants have a bad season this year, where they're getting torn to shreds on the defensive side of the ball, which that's a very good possibility because the first string doesn't look that great, man, Mike, going up against other people's first string. I mean, Sam Darnold tore him apart, and then Chase Daniels, who, I mean, he's not Trubisky. So it wasn't like they faced Chicago's first, you know, their starting quarterback. All right, so let's not get carried away, New York Giant fans. That's the one unit that I've been unimpressed by this preseason is defensive unit overall.
I you know what? When we're done analyzing, I do have a question for you. Something that I've been thinking about as far as the Giants go.
Okay, fire away.
Oh, well, here's what I was going to ask you, and I know you love the guy, but considering you took a running back second overall, considering he's already in the top 5, top 6, and highest paid running backs in the league, I'm just looking at where the league is going, and these running backs that are refusing to play on that fifth-year option, you got Melvin Gordon that's refusing to play on a fifth-year option, you got Todd Gurley that forced a new contract after his third year. You have Ezekiel Elliott, who's holding out for a new contract after his third year. If the Giants have a bad year this year, what do you think is going to happen? Saquon is obviously going to become the highest paid running back in the league, and I don't necessarily know he's going to play past that third year, because remember, you're able to renegotiate your rookie deal after 3 years in the league. Are the Giants, that's just going to hamper them, you know what I mean? Are the Giants going to be able to
lock them up, man, Mike? They got to.
But if I come to you, Lloyd, and I'm saying, yo, 4 years, 60 with $50 million guaranteed, can you afford to do that? $15 million a year? Because that's what he's going to do. Take the Todd Gurley deal, and it's going to be more than that. He's going to be younger than, he's going to be younger than Lev Bell when Lev Bell got it. His numbers are probably going to dwarf any one of those guys' numbers from a receptions, from a yards, from everything. If he comes to the table with 6,000 total yards and 30 touchdowns after his first 3 years in the league, we're talking maybe 5 years, $75 million. You know, we're talking unprecedented numbers. And now all of a sudden, you got that kind of money locked into the running back position, or you have a holdout. And that's what I was thinking about. I was like, man, I can't wait to get back from vacation to ask you about that, because now all of a sudden, where are you saving money? Like, the running back position is one of the positions teams save money on, and you're going to be one of the teams really spending money on it.
Yeah, listen, that's going to be a tough thing down the line, man, Mike, because I can definitely see that happening. 1,000% can see that happening.
Before, I was like, nah, I wouldn't, but, like, think about it. Lev Bell just sat on an entire year as a running back to preserve his body to make sure he got paid. Zeke is doing it now. Melvin Gordon is doing it now. You have legitimate, real big-time superstar running backs doing it, setting the trend. And what happens if he does it?
Did Zeke sign with the Cowboys? I heard there was reports that he was coming into camp or something like that.
As far as I know, I think Zeke was out staying in Cancun in his agent's mansion.
Damn.
Like, just chilling. Yeah. I don't know, man. I'll be honest, but he said it. And this is where, remember what we were just having a conversation about ownership and Jay-Z. Is Jay-Z going to be the owner that breaks the mold? Because remember something. This is what these players, you know, us as fans are like, honor your contract. Well, this is something that they collectively negotiated in the CBA, right? It says that a player is allowed to reopen negotiations after year three of his rookie deal. They don't have to wait until year four, and they don't have to wait until their fifth year options are picked up. They can start the conversations after that third year. So, you know, is he going? Who's going to be the first owner to do it? I mean, the Rams did it. And look how it worked out. Gurley didn't even finish the year last year, and now you hear about this bum knee that basically is going to hamper him the rest of his career.
Yeah,
I don't
crazy.
Think anybody else is going to do it. Pittsburgh let Le'Veon Bell sit the entire year to not be the team to do it.
Yeah, yeah. It's going to be interesting to see. We'll see what happens.
Yeah.
Listeners, we on top of all that, listeners. Best believe that. But, man, Mike, you got a rant for us for this week?
Can I rant in just two words? But do you think that'll make sense to everybody?
It'll make sense to me, and I'm sure it'll make sense to the listeners.
Antonio Brown.
Yeah.
Antonio Brown.
What was up with that? He even took to Twitter and told somebody, if you give me a certain type of helmet, I'll send you an autographed practice jersey.
Antonio Brown. Like, everything that came out helped him and made him look great from the Big Ben just sitting on coolers, eating, you know what I mean? Like, not practicing. Like, you came out and everybody, you have actually had people on your side. And then you have, I don't even know do we call it preseason? Because he hasn't even played. Do we call it camp? I don't know what we call it. Just like you burn your feet. You get frostbite on your feet wearing the wrong socks, and now you're going to sue the NFL over a helmet. Make sense of that? I don't get it. You know what I mean? Antonio Brown, that's all I'm going to say. Pick whatever story you want, Antonio Brown.
Well, there you have it, listeners, a short rant. And with that being said, that's going to bring us to the close of this week's show. We want to again welcome Mad Mike back from his vacation. And we want to thank you, the listeners, for sticking with us week in and week out and keeping this thing going. And we want to thank our producer, Ayo Omar Baker, for rocking out. Mad Mike, I also want to say that I was at the Giants practice on Tuesday, and I had a chance to meet Stephen Baker, a.k.a. the touchdown maker, one of the nicest athletes that I've ever met. So hopefully at some point we'll be able to have him on the show moving forward. So fingers crossed on that. So listeners, please have a safe and blessed week. And me and the Mad Mike will see you in 7 days. So ayo, let's roll, baby.
And just like that, much like my cup of coffee, this show is over, finished, finito, done, we're out of here. Thank y'all for listening. If you subscribed, much appreciated. If not, please do so, because brand new episodes drop every single Monday, and I would hate to see you miss something. LloydAThompson.com, part of MyFresh.com. Subscribe, follow, @LloydAThompson on Instagram and Twitter. We're out of here. Peace.